This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you. Shopify is a global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real life store stage, all the way to the, hey Marge, did we just hit a million orders stage? Shopify is there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Running a growing business means getting the insights you need wherever you are. With Shopify's single dashboard, you can manage orders, shipping, and payments from anywhere. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the United States, and Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/ifanboy, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/ifanboy now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/ifanboy.
This is the iFanboy Pick of the Week podcast, episode 571, brought to you by iFanboy listeners just like you.
I don't care what you do, I'm getting out. No, nothing ever shames me. Don't want a thing from you, I'm going out. I don't care if you're angry.
The iFanboy Pick of the Week podcast, episode 571. I am Josh Flanagan. I am with Connor Kilpatrick.
Hello.
And Ron Richards.
And when you say you're with Connor, is it like emotionally or just physically?
Basically, like when I say I'm with you.
I'm with you.
With you. I'm with you. Right.
I'm with you. What is that?
It's from My Blue Heaven, one of the greatest
Okay, sorry.
Greatest sequels of all time.
Yeah. Hold on, let's talk about semantics for a while. We are iFanboy, and we talk about semantics, and every week, also a stack of comic books. One of us has the job of picking their favorite book. That is called The Pick of the Week. We talk about that book. We're going to talk about other books, comic books, and we'll talk about the patron pick, and we may even get to a little listener mail or voicemail. You know what? It's a freewheeling kind of thing. We'll have to see what happens near the end. It'll be a good time. Your spoiler warning is that there are probably going to be spoilers. It's a review show. We're going to talk about what happens in the books. Exercise your caution. Ain't on us, bro. Ron, you had the pick.
I did have the pick, and as I was reading all my books, I was going through, and I'll be honest, it was neck and neck on a couple of different options. Some books I really, really enjoyed, but I stepped away from it. I got some perspective. I looked out at the city, and I realized that maybe it's mainly due to the flashessence that we're going through right now.
The
renaissance of the Flash on TV. But the Flash number 16 was my pick of the week this week because it really, really doesn't get better than the Flash versus the Rogues, and this reached a crescendo that was as much fun to read as to watch like a really close baseball game. Or to like, it was just like a strategic, you know, just a delight to watch the story unfold. Before I get into why this was so good, one nitpick. If you remember, Jesus, was it last week or 2 weeks ago where we talked about the Flash number 15?
Yeah.
Connor?
That was 2 weeks ago.
Yeah, and I complained about how the cover featured Heatwave, but he was barely in the issue.
Right.
And then this issue, the cover featured Mirror Master, and he's barely in the issue. I think they switched the covers and screwed up, to be honest with you.
Was last week Mirror Master?
It was. And this issue opens with a big Heatwave. Half the book is all about Flash versus Heatwave. I think that a little editorial screw up there in the Flash office at DC Comics headquarters. But regardless of that, as we've been talking about, this story arc by Josh Williamson and Carmine DiGiomenico, or Giandomenico, has focused on Flash versus the Rogues. And what we find out in this issue is that this is, you know, Barry Allen figures out that the whole reason why the Rogues are kind of back is because they're making one last score. You know, instead of robbing a bank and stealing some of the diamonds, they stole them all. And so, you know,
like, do they just steal some when they do the bank robbery? You feel
well,
like?
it says here, Golden Glyer stole every single diamond in the LexCorp Diamond Exchange, not a handful like she has in the past. She took all of them. you know, and Mirror Master stole the statue of Mercury in Corto Maltese, and Weather Wizard hit restaurants and got bags of money, and you know, basically they're making huge scores. And Barry realizes that no, they're making their ultimate move. They're trying to make their one big last score before they leave town. And O'Connor, you're reading this. Josh, yes. Are you reading The Flash? Or?
No.
All right. So, Connor, you can appreciate the chess match of this, yeah. Where Captain Cold has come up with the ultimate plan, told every rogue what to do, and Heatwave goes off script. And instead of just distracting The Flash and then getting caught like he was supposed to, he thinks he defeats The Flash. And but turns out The Flash made him think he was defeating The Flash because he knew that he'd lead him right to the rogues. And so he's able to defeat all the rogues on a boat, and it's just Flash and Captain Cold like it always should be. And it looks as if Flash has got the upper hand. But Captain Cold pulls out a new gun out of his bag.
Say hello to my black ice gun.
Which does admittedly look kind of like one of the what is that game, Portal?
Yeah.
You know, it looks a little Halo-y-esque, actually, but whatever. But I just love the interplay between The Flash and the rogues, and I love that it's just a chess match, and it's just that they're each trying to one-up each other, and this, like, and this idea of respect that they have in their pursuits of, trying to score crimes in Central City and Barry stopping them, and the rule of the rogues and the kind of the gentleman's agreement they have, and when that gets pushed to the limit. And it comes down, you know, Captain Cold and The Flash is like one of the perfect nemesis situations. And this just sang on every page, I thought.
Yeah, this is probably my favorite arc. I hate to be the one who always brings it up, but it really bugged me, this issue. Carmine DiGiomenico has done a good job with the art. He's a great artist. He's done a good job
with the lines.
With the costume, making the lines look like energy coming out of him. But there was a couple of panels here. Like I'm thinking of the double page spread that opens the issue up, where he's standing there, and you really get to see just how dumb these lines look.
Well, yeah, it's I agree with you. It's absolutely frustrating. There's another panel where he's standing over Heatwave, and like all of the lightning is converging on the Flash emblem on his chest, and which is like that's how it is in that double page spread in the book open. And I like DiGiomenico's art a lot, and I think that he's really capturing the kinetic energy that you need when you're doing a Flash book. And it's clear that they're trying to pick up what they can from the TV shows, mainly, you know, and a lot of time because of the Flash, the effect of the Flash on the TV show, it's just a yellow lightning bolt to identify Barry as he's running around. And so I see them trying to mirror that, but the execution is just so annoyingly awkward.
Like, you want to say that there's lightning bolts coming out of his sort of his chest area and going all over his body? Yeah. Sure, but why are there these stupid double ones going down his ribcage? Why is it going around his kneecap?
Right. Why does it look like it's his costume from a video game? Right.
Yeah.
But a good example of it is that there's the double page spread when he's on the boat and when he takes out all the rogues but Captain Cold. And it's that double page spread of basically him, you know, taking down each rogue. And there's just all this lightning, yes. And there's the cracka, 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 whatever. And you get the sense, okay, yeah, the Flash is in movement. There's lightning, and the lightning isn't tied to his costume. So there, here it works.
Yes.
Yeah.
It's just when he's sort of standing still, it just becomes clear, oh, right, you've definitely ruined the best costume in comics.
Yep. Agreed.
But that aside, which I know I can't let go, but it's been 6 years, but it's just hard to ignore, you know.
They keep adjusting it. Well, you know what? You're right. This isn't so good. Let's try another thing. It's like, you had it.
Yeah.
You had it already. There's nothing better.
You had it since the 1960s. It was not like you had it for a week. You had it for 5 decades.
They had it. And then they lost it.
But you're right. It doesn't. You can't beat the rogues.
Your problem isn't making the costume. Your problem keeping the costume.
I'm surprised that you went to bridge it to a Seinfeld joke and not pick up on the chance to do a Sean Connery accent.
I decided you
zigged where I thought you would zag.
Yeah,
and I'm you've got moxie. I'm impressed.
Great arc with great art, other than the costume problems. Flash and the Rogues is always a special thing. You don't want to overdo it. Don't ever make the last score. Don't these guys watch movies?
Yeah.
They know when you make your final big score, it never goes the right way.
And I just love the rogues kind of, you know, the fall in line for Captain Cold, and that he has the plan and he figured it out, and it looks like they're going to do it. And it's just that one, you know, his heat wave zigged where he should have zagged.
It's always Mick.
It's always Mick, Rory. It's always. Although apparently there's a statue of him in Washington, D.C. now.
Someone needs to send him to a time machine and go into the future and get him away from the rogues. If
that's smart. A good idea. But I just love the planning of Captain Cold, and then even in the face of thinking he has the flawless plan, being prepared for the fact that it won't by now having this black ice gun.
Well, he's got levels of his plan. So get back really quickly to the costume.
Oh, Jesus Christ, you're obsessed.
So I always read Flash in conjunction with Green Lantern.
Okay.
Because they come out together.
Sure.
And I went back to confirm this, that I wasn't crazy. When the New 52 launched, Green Lantern also had all those dumb lines on his costume. Okay. However, if you read the Green Lantern books, you'll see all of the Green Lanterns are back to wearing their classic costumes. There are no dumb lines anywhere.
Right.
Looked at the Hal Jordan book, it would not look any different than a book you would have read 10 years ago in terms of what the characters look like.
So they're riding the ship.
Somehow, the Green Lantern office quietly reverted the look back to the pre-52 costume, and no one noticed. But yet the other offices are still dealing with this nonsense. And that really stuck out to me.
There's the chance that the Flash office likes it, which is a bigger issue, right? I mean, you know, like it's not like they got this mandate from DiDio and the Green Lantern office is just ignoring it.
Maybe.
You know, although I do like the idea of that, but still, yeah.
Just to piggyback really quickly off of my bounty last week for, was it last week or the week before, $100 American for the death of Damian?
Right. That was last week.
It was related, but if anyone wants to get rid of Roy Harper's hat from this week's Titans, I will give you $20 American.
Wow.
I will go ahead and add 20 to that. And I don't even read it. I just know that it is an affront.
Yeah.
It's conceptually. Yeah. All right.
Since we're on the whole costume angle,
we might have to start keeping track of these bounties.
Well, we haven't even talked about. I can't.
I know. Can't even do it.
Good issue, though. Great arc.
Great issue. Love this arc. Love the Flash. I love it when the Flash is in a good spot, and that's where it is now, and I hope it continues. But I will tell you, the close runner up was the Unworthy Thor #4. The Unworthy Thor #4. Say that 3 times fast.
The Unworthy Thor #4. Ooh, okay. That is good. Yeah.
Right. And purely for a moment, it was the pick in the week from page 1, where in the credits under artists, this is a bit of a jam issue with 4 different artists. And purely by the fact that they were identifying which artist did what by the era of Thor. So you had Olivier Coipel on present day, Fraser Irving on young Thor, Isad Rabik on worthy Thor, and Russell Dodderman on unworthy Thor. And I was like, oh, that's fantastic.
That's a Thor all-star lineup in terms of artists.
It is.
It was quite a thing.
This book reads subtitled Journey to the Hammer. Like, he's just trying to get to that hammer. He gets close, and then someone pulls him away.
Well, is there anything greater than Isad Rabik's worthy Thor section of him lounging?
No.
Staring at the hammer, like it was amazing. It was
that was like one of those things, like when I'm not saying it's as big, but like when Geoff Johns sort of first did all the colored lanterns, you thought, wow, why did no one think of that? And this is one of those, like, wow, how has that never been a thing before? That he's just worried that he's gonna lose. I really liked that.
That he worries every morning that he's gonna be unworthy. Yeah, that was.
Yeah,
it's good, and the glower on his face as he stares at it. It reminded me of how great that Thor book was.
It was so good. And I just love the... But I mean, this is post-coital Thor, right?
Oh my god, it is!
Look at his pants, dude.
It really is. Yeah, his pants are kind of open. He's lounging. I think
those pants are just like that.
Oh.
I don't think our Asgardians have buttons.
Okay, so yeah, you're right. Looking on, no, I don't know. Yeah, maybe
Theoretically, it could be post-yoga Thor.
But true, this could be post yoga Thor.
However, Jade Foster is naked in it, so I
she is yeah she's wrapped in a sheet. Yeah, maybe she did. Maybe they just did some hot yoga together.
Maybe. I prefer to think it was post coital Thor.
Yeah, I think it's post coital Thor. I think we definitely
We don't want do yoga.
This is great. This was really great. I've been enjoying this miniseries. As Thor, unworthy Thor, whatever the fuck you want to call him, is trying to get to the ultimate Thor's hammer, which I don't think wants to go to him based on what's happening in this issue in terms of it seems to be calling out for the ultimate Thor only.
Yeah.
But he finally gets his hands on it in the last page, so we'll find out next in the final issue, I guess.
Good cliffhanger.
If you look later when they switch to whatever Thor it is that Dodderman is drawing, he has a rope tied around that part of his pants.
Got
to
hold it up.
He had removed the rope for either yoga or coitus.
Right. Or maybe he lost some weight, maybe.
What if it was yoga coitus?
Well,
coitus
later, later Thor has obviously put on some weight.
Good point. He's been drinking. He's not quite
as lean as he was in his yoga days.
He's just younger.
Although he does say short hair Thor does say that he hasn't had he stopped drinking. Like he's more focused, right?
It's paleo Thor.
I like the idea of these Thor adjectives. It's like self doubt Thor.
It's like a Barbie line.
It quickly becomes overwhelming.
Yeah, it does.
and I like that we can just keep adding to whatever it is we need to describe the page that we're on.
Well, the final page is almost like faux hawk Thor. His hair's kind of up in the top a little bit.
Right.
Yeah. This is great. And this, like I said, this is a close second on pick of the week, just because I'm really enjoying the series, and I thought the art, the mix of art styles and the artists as well. I mean, you can be Fraser Irving, Esad Ribic in any book, and then Coypel and Dowderman. I mean, like, that's just a great lineup.
Yes. I will tell you one thing though, that it left him with a bit of a sour taste.
Oh.
That last bit on the last page, that's what they, whatever the fuck they did with Nick Fury now, right?
Wait. I think so. Yeah.
It adds that. $50 American dollars.
For what? What are you talking?
The guy in the robe with the chains. That's Nick Fury. Yeah,
that is Nick Fury.
Yeah, that needs to be wiped from the face of the earth. So $50 American for that one.
The new Watcher.
Fuck yeah, or whatever it is. Yeah.
Look it. And by the way, his eye glows like a fucking spider.
It's one of the dumbest things they've done, and they've done a lot of really dumb things. But we don't know what to do with Nick Fury. We can't have him on the page because he doesn't match Samuel L. Jackson. Let's make him the Watcher.
Sure, why not? That'll be fun.
It's stupider than Hal Jordan as Spectre.
Yes.
It's on the same level.
Hal Jordan at least is a cosmic level hero who dealt with that stuff. We're going to take the grizzled World War II vet and have him living on the moon in a robe with chains.
That's fair. Like that's fair.
Seven.
Or was he a World War II vet, or was it the Gulf War? I can never keep track with Marvel.
You shut your mouth.
It's World War fucking II.
I know.
His son, Samuel L. Jackson, fought in Desert Storm.
No, I don't think he did. I think it was amazing.
I don't care. I never read it. Stupid.
Anyway, we'll talk about stupid. IVX number 4. This really gets my goat. This really gets my goat.
About every issue, aren't we?
No, we're not. I haven't been. I purposely haven't been, by the way. I skipped a couple issues, by the way, sirs.
Isn't this one taking place before the issue we talked about last time?
Yeah, that's what I'm annoyed at. So last week I talked about Young X-Men, or no, New X-Men, whatever the fuck X-Men, just
Young
X-Men. All New X-Men, right. Unworthy X-Men, Postcoital X-Men. The same joke works. And in that issue, the stupid Mosaic character jumped into Cyclops after he had jumped into Magneto and then stole the Blackbird, right, and took off. And I read that and I was like, oh, this clearly happened in an issue of some Inhumans book that I don't care about. So I missed this chapter of the crossover, right? Mm-hmm. Except that it appears to have happened in this issue and happened nearly, only vaguely similar to what happened in that issue of X-Men that I read. That's crossover 101, people.
Who started drawing this? Was it Neil Francis Yu?
I think it was, yep.
Yeah, we've come a long way, baby.
And then, yeah, no, to who's this guy? Javier Garon, who, you know, isn't bad, but what drives me crazy is that the end of the issue is this, the dumb Mosaic character comes out of Cyclops' body and arrives, and there's Ms. Marvel and the other young Inhumans or whatever, and Ms. Marvel, you know, asks the question that the issue ends on is, who are the good guys here?
It's the same role she played in Civil War.
It's so stupid.
She's playing the exact same role she played in Civil War 2. It's like we're having the same thing all over again.
It's stupid and lazy. That's my problem with this. It's like we need to have the X-Men and the Inhumans fight. The X-Men are going to want to fight a cloud, and the Inhumans are going to want to protect the cloud. Make that work.
And then Ms. Marvel goes, who are the good guys? Like she did 3 months ago for Civil War 2. I think that my problem overall with the state of the world in terms of X-Men and Inhumans is, and I realized this a couple of weeks ago, is I just don't care about the Inhumans.
Yeah.
I've been trying really, really hard. I've been reading all the books. But other than like three of them, like Medusa and Black Bolt, Lockjaw, and maybe Karnak, I just don't care about any of them. Maybe Crystal, too. I don't know what their names are. I don't know what their powers are. I really don't care what happens to them. I don't feel any affinity to them.
I mean, like, literally, there's a whole sequence in the beginning of this issue where Medusa and the other Inhumans who are trapped in limbo are trying to figure out how to get out. And it's literally laughable in terms of what I remember the Inhumans being as what they are now. You know, and at one point, doesn't she say to Gorgon to use your, what is it, to, you know, you'll need to use your sonic stomp. Mm-hmm. It's like, really? Does he call it a sonic stomp?
Stan, what Adam say that?
I don't know about that.
Over the weekend, I read Marvel's, I haven't read it in probably 15 years.
Yeah.
I realized I didn't own a collection of it, so I bought the collection.
I've got like 9. You should have told me. I keep buying it. Every time they put it out, I buy it.
The part where they show up, it's very brief, but you reminded you of what a big deal it was when the Inhumans showed up and how cool they
were.
And now they're just sort of this boring X-Men knockoff. And they're so focused on the new characters because they're trying to build them up that the ones that are actually compelling aren't doing anything.
Let me ask you something. Who's the fish Inhuman?
Fish Inhuman.
Triton.
Triton, yeah. There's that shot in both Fantastic Four and Stan and Jack's run and in Marvel's where it is an echo of it when Triton is driving a truck.
Yes, yes.
I could see that panel in my head. I could draw it for you. Not as good as Alex Ross or Jack Kirby, but I just love the idea of Triton driving a truck.
It's good. This is my problem.
But no, but I totally agree with you. The Inhumans used to be they were royalty. They were in the secret place. They were rumored about. They weren't as apparent even when they're on the moon. Like that worked too. All this kind of stuff. And now it's just shitty X-Men knockoff. And so I feel bad because I got into a little Twitter spat with one of the listeners, and I apologize to you. It wasn't really a spat, and I forget the guy's name. If I can find it, I'll mention it. He was defending IVX. Here we go. Daniel on Twitter was saying, that he likes the characterization in IVX. It was good. I go, yeah, except they're fighting a cloud. Like, it's just everything. It's just you're fighting a cloud. Like that's the whole
film about that. You can't tell it wasn't valid.
Yeah, I know exactly. So it just bothers me.
Would you prefer they fight trees?
No.
Have you considered not reading it?
I did. Well, the thing is, Josh, baby steps. I'm not reading every chapter of it.
It's true.
Right?
It's growth.
I'm only reading the X-Men books that I'm reading and the main book. I'm not reading. You want one of those bounties. I'm not reading Uncanny Inhumans. I'm not reading any Inhumans. I'm not doing any of that. But it's not like I can't understand the storyline. But I still want to know. I'm very excited for what's going to happen in April with the X-Men. But I want to know how it gets there. So we'll see. Bah.
All right.
Angry.
So Jessica Jones number 5, I thought was a really interesting sort of meta commentary on comics in general.
Oh yeah.
Which I liked. I thought this was a great issue.
I got the same vibe as I was reading this. I was like, really? Are we doing this?
So for those who haven't been reading it, Josh, I assume you're still not reading it for some bizarre reason.
Josh, you should read this issue, Josh.
There's a lot of things I should do.
This book feels like the old Jessica Jones book.
We should pause the podcast and give Josh time to go read the book. We'll wait.
I'm like 3 issues back.
No, I know. Anyway, this is like old Jessica Jones and then the weirdo, bizarro commentary on comics.
One of the things that Bendis has always done, going back to Powers, was whenever there's like a scene in a police station, there's always been somebody being taken away who's yelling about something meta, right? So like, yeah. He'd have his characters commenting on something going on in comics. And so here, Jessica's been dealing with this Hydra agent, but in the background, she's had a PI case and it involved a husband and a wife. And at the end of the last issue, we found out that the husband killed the wife, and the police have brought him in for questioning, but he will only talk to Jessica. So this whole issue is basically Jessica and the guy talking. It's like a classic Bendis issue, just a giant conversation. Although there's a sub conversation between Luke Cage and Ben Urich that's also very good. Although Luke Cage is exactly like the guy from the TV show.
But that was a great conversation, by the way.
Yeah, this is basically the whole issue, 2 conversations, and Bendis does that really well. Yeah. And here, the guy says basically, I'm from another reality. You superheroes broke reality. He's mentioning, the Secret Wars. And how he slipped through with a handful of other people. He knows it. He had a family in the other universe. He has a wife here he doesn't know. So he killed her because he realized there's no consequences because none of this is real anyway. It's all going to get reset. And it just ended up being this really long, interesting conversation about, superhero comics. And he's like, trying to tell her, it doesn't matter what you do. It's going to all change.
He said he wanted to test the theory that nothing matters by, I'm just going to kill my wife and see what happens. And if nothing happens, then nothing matters. And she's like, you're literally in jail. And he's like, yeah, but it doesn't matter. Like, it's like he's talking more on a bigger level than like to do something really, really bad. And he's like, yeah, no, we can kill whoever we want. It doesn't matter because you guys broke all this. You took me from my reality and nothing happened. He just keeps on saying nothing matters. And it's a very logical, slightly insane, but also it's just like, yeah.
And the story point that's going to move forward is basically your buddies did this. You don't know about it. Don't you think you should know about it? You should go find out. And at the end of the issue, she walks out of the police station and, sort of screams in frustration because she realizes it's probably true that her friends broke the reality. So
yeah.
Although, so that was the middle of the issue when she screamed. But then she goes back to the Hydra agent and says, basically, fuck all this. So,
yeah, and she agrees to take down Carol.
Yeah.
Or give them what they need for Carol, this is going in a very interesting direction, and I can admit that I was skeptical about it at first, but now I'm like, oh man, this was
good. This is a good endorsement, I will say.
Yeah, go check it out.
Because I felt like at first we were all like, we're not sure.
Yeah.
It was like, all right, obviously you're doing this thing again, but should you? The same question that has recently popped up with the new David Brent movie, which should this be? Should I put any which I just keep it like it is in my mind, which was perfect, you know? I don't know.
This is good.
If this is good, I'll check it. All right, fair enough.
Yeah, it's been good. Real quick, how you can help support iFanboy, ifanboy.com/support. That's where you can find our Amazon link. Everyone who shops at Amazon who uses that link, we thank you very much. We get a little piece of your sale or your purchase. Nothing comes out of your pocket, comes out of Amazon's pocket.
Not soul. We don't get a piece of that. A piece of your sale.
Right.
Sale, not soul. Very important vowel distinction.
I was trying to slip that through, and you guys ruined it. I was going to start a side business of collecting souls. You get whatever you want from Amazon. Nothing comes out of your pocket. We get a little piece of that. It helps keep the lights on, and we appreciate everyone who does that. Also, at ifanboy.com/support is a direct donation button via PayPal. You click on that. And just, you know, if you don't want to be a member of the Patreon or go through Amazon, you can just throw a couple dollars that way. Again, tax season rapidly approaching if you need to unload some cash.
We are here.
That's not how it works, but it's a joke.
We are a shelter. We are a tax shelter. Go for it.
So you can do it there at the direct donation button via PayPal. Also, patreon.com/ifanboy. That's where all the exciting things are happening. We've unlocked many different rewards. You'll hear about some of them on this show. But the next reward we've unlocked is the T-shirts. We updated you last week. Is there an update this week, Ron?
We are working on it.
Right. So there you go. So T-shirts are coming. Yes. The next reward to be unlocked is we will do this show live streaming every week if we unlock the next reward. So you get to watch us. This week you would have seen struggling to do the opening. Would have been your delight to watch this morning. We had to do it about four times.
But with laughter.
Oh, sure. But what you miss when you don't see it live is sometimes we mess up the opening. Have to start over. So that's what you'd have seen. If you hit the next reward level, you get to see that every week. Check that out. Patreon.com/ifanboy. And thanks to you, everyone who does all those things.
All right. Real quickly, Wicked in the Vine number 26 is just a reminder of the magic that is Jamie McKelvey and Matt Wilson working together. And while I love Kieran and you may not know what the hell's going on in the book and the gods and all that kind of crazy shit, just flipping through the pages of this book, there were some pages in this issue that were just like, Jesus Christ, they're good. So this is your every now and then reminder.
Power Man and Iron Fist is, I think, our consensus for the best book Marvel's publishing, and it's only got 2 issues left, so that's nice.
Yeah.
That was a nice little Merry Christmas for everybody.
I got 2 words for you. Can you guess what those words are?
Go screw.
Elmo Bondoc.
I wasn't going to guess that.
I wasn't either.
This is my new favorite artist name, Elmo Bondoc.
Well, I wanted to mention that Elmo Bondoc is really good. And he's the fill-in artist this week, and normally I get annoyed when Sanford Green's not drawing it. However, I really liked Elmo Bondoc's art. So there you go. If you're not reading this, you got 2 more months to get on the train, but this was the best book Marvel's publishing. It'll probably be for the next 2 months, and then one less Marvel book to read.
David Walker is still writing the new Luke Cage book, so let's give him a chance. But it's very disappointing that they're ending this at 15.
Well, it's going to be Luke Cage TV style, which I will watch the show for, and I'll return to the comics to read the comics version. That's how it's supposed to work, and now it's all the same.
Yep.
So there you go. Detective Comics 950 was funny because when I saw on the list, I thought, oh, 950 in the old days, that would have been an anniversary issue. And then I opened it up and it said Detective Comics 950 oversized anniversary issue. I thought, yay! And then I read it and I was like, boo!
Yeah, so much.
Yeah.
In the old days, the anniversary issues were usually, again, not always, but usually, like little vignette anthology one, you know, short stories done by all-star creators. And this was a bunch of trailers for upcoming storylines, and it felt very lame.
That's bad.
I say I was leaning towards getting away from this book. There's just things I like about it, but then there's other things that I find very boring about it. And this issue did not help.
Yeah.
There was a lot of talking, like a ton of explaining what's going on. Like if you just flip through it, there's huge word balloons everywhere.
Yes.
There's nothing happening. It's talking about stuff. I mean, like when we get to the Azrael part, I was like, I fell asleep reading it.
I skipped the Azrael storyline. I cannot stand Azrael. Couldn't care less about him. I just skipped it.
Second full page spread. If you look at the bottom, the whole thing is just big word balloons, you know, against a scene of some kind. And I kind of nodded off during that. And I flipped to the next page and I saw more explaining in the Batcave. And I was like, all right, I'm out. And I just, and then the next spread is the same thing.
Yeah.
And I was just like, no matter what happens here, I don't care. Except for that Azrael with his hood off looks like Thor used to look in the 80s when he was in his secret identity.
Yes, you're right. It looks like the doctor.
I can't remember his name.
Dr. Donald Blake?
Yeah. No, he had a.
Sigurd Jarlson. Sigurd Jarlson, yeah.
Yeah. Just, which I always liked.
It was literally, there was like 5 stories and every one of them was a trailer for a storyline that's going to come up soon.
Lame.
Yeah, and one of the things that I really liked about this was that we're going to get to this, I guess, but I'm going to leave a placeholder here, I guess. One of the things I really liked about this book that I thought that adding Clayface to it was really interesting, and I like what they're doing with it, but I'm starting to see it happen in other books in exactly the same way, and it's annoying.
Where the bad guy joins the team?
Mm-hmm.
Yep. Well, they love that.
Thing is I don't understand what's wrong with him. I can't wrap my head around what... Like, they built him some sort of device to fix what's wrong with him, but I don't know what's wrong with him.
There's always a but. It's because, he's got a Sophie's Choice thing where the longer he stays human, the more it's going to rip his DNA apart so that he won't be able to be human.
So does that mean he can't use his clay powers to change his appearance? Is that what they're saying?
I don't know.
See, that's what I didn't understand. Anyway, this was disappointing.
Yeah.
All right.
Action Comics, number 973. I complained about Superman last week, where I said I hated it. But this week, like, they pulled me in basically because the cover was, who's this Clark Kent? And I was like, all right, let's get to it so I can be done with this book. Just tell me who that guy is.
You were complaining last week about the Superman comic, but the Clark Kent storyline's been happening in Action.
Yeah, I know. But for a little while, they were all sort of
He's there.
Interjoined. And yeah. I kind of... Like, I don't really differentiate between Superman and Action. Just which one comes out, that's the part of the story.
Look, this story, you know, Lois Lane goes undercover for a story, and Superwoman's dying and whatever. I was reading this, and I was like, listen, I realize as Superman, you're very busy. There's a lot of pull on your time. Everybody wants a piece of you. However, if there was some dude walking around pretending to be you, living your life... I feel like that's the number one priority on my list, right? I mean, there's this guy pretending to be Clark Kent. He's at the Daily Planet. He's on the scene for stories. And every time he comes up, Clark's like, "Yeah, that's weird, but I'll deal with that later. I got this other thing going on." I'm like, no, there's a dude who's pretending to be you. That is, to me, job one.
I feel like he did that thing where this was totally like a 70s comic book.
Yeah.
Like having her dress up like a waitress. And I was like, that's wacky. Why are they doing this? I agree with you, but I also feel like he did that thing where, like, remember when George W. Bush met Putin? He's like, I looked into his soul. He's a good guy.
Right.
And I feel like that's what they did with Superman and Clark Kent. Eh, he's okay. I'm not going to worry about it.
Still, like, who is he? And why is he doing this? And how did this all happen? I feel like should be dealt with pretty quickly.
I got a question that I'd like to have dealt with.
Yeah.
Is the artist Patch Zercher?
Yes, Patrick Zercher.
So that is Patrick Zercher, right? It wasn't just... Okay,
yeah, that's his Twitter handle.
Oh, okay, gotcha. Okay, good.
It's in the old days when M.D. Bright would be M.D. Bright or Doc Bright or, you know, in the credits. Yeah. They just sort of...
That was very confusing back then.
Yeah.
Mark Bright.
We didn't have the access to the same information we do now.
Right.
Action Comics, I need to focus.
There's a lot going on in this issue.
I need to focus. Like, it's just like it's dealing with a bunch of shit. It's like me on a work day. It's just like, can you handle this? Yeah, sure. And then before you're done with that, somebody hands you something else and it's just... Focus. You can do whatever you want in this story. You don't have to fix everything.
I do really want to know.
I really want to know. It's literally the only reason I'm reading it anymore.
Mm.
That's it.
Deal with that. Like, if I have a lot going on in my life, but if there was some dude who was also me, also in my life, I'd focus on that. That's all I'm saying. Continue.
So Star Wars Dr. Aphra number 4. Josh, I got two words for you.
I'm listening.
Admiral Ozzel.
Yeah.
I giggled. So at the end of this issue, when the skirmish is over and the Captain Tallvan has to report in, she's reporting into Admiral Ozzel, and I see a little hologram Ozzel as drawn by Kev Walker with a mustache, and I was like, I'm happy.
I like how he has taken on, like, the corporate line.
Yep.
He's like, I'm going to talk to her like Vader does and see how that goes.
Yep.
And he liked it. He liked how it felt.
I really want to go deeper. I want comics to go deeper on Ozzel. I would read Star Wars Admiral Ozzel, a miniseries about Admiral Ozzel.
Well, you would, and I would.
Yeah.
I mean, that's not going to be a feature. So.
Anyway, this would
definitely be better than a story of Yoda climbing a hill.
But absolutely. I like what Kieran Gillen is writing with the story, and that it's basically like Dr. Aphra and her father. It's kind of like Indiana Jones-esque adventure in the Star Wars universe.
Yeah.
Which I'm liking it.
What if it was a book called Star Wars: The Admirals, and each issue was about a different admiral?
Oh God, sign me up.
Oh my God, did you read Jar Jar? That was good, but Piet?
Man, I would love just a Star Wars, the bureaucracy, you know, like I want General Taggy like doing paperwork. I want to find the guy who's in charge of the landing codes.
General Veer's requisitioning supplies for his AT-ATs.
Yep, exactly. Oh, that would be genius.
Oh, so you get no complaints.
The Star Wars, the bureaucracy. There you go, guys. Free idea. I'm going to text Jason Aaron right now and tell him that. All right, so that said,
I know what he's
going to
say.
Hey, this is Connor, and this is the part of the show where normally we'd be talking about Justice League of America Rebirth number one, giving our ratings, if we hadn't left it off the script by accident. So we didn't talk about it. It didn't happen. We apologize. And we now return to the Pick of the Week podcast, already in progress.
Yeah, so that was all the books that we enjoyed this week. But you, the patrons, get to pick a book to make us read and talk about here on the book. You're going to force us to read it. Luckily, this week, it was a book that I was already planning on reading. It was Kingpin number one, published by Marvel Comics, written by Matthew Rosenberg, with art by Ben Torres, colors by Jordan Boyd. What did you
generate? Torres of Rolling Stone?
Yeah.
Yes.
Check and this out. It's a mojo.
Anyway, so Kingpin number one from Marvel, what did you guys think about that?
I had read Matt Rosenberg's previous Kingpin number one,
yeah,
and I thought it was pretty good, and I enjoyed it, but I wasn't all that interested in it.
Yeah.
So I don't know if I would have read this, but I was really glad I did. I enjoyed it way more than the last number one. It was like, this would have been maybe a pick of the week for me.
Wow. That is crazy.
This was in tight contention for Pick of the Week. I really enjoyed it. I like Ben Torres's art a lot. I just wrestle with if he's the right artist for this book.
It sends a page every 18 minutes.
I feel like I'm living in a bizarre world.
Why?
I thought the art was not professional level.
Wow. Well, this goes back to something that we were talking about where the level of art in comics has been, you know, downgraded. But I do like Ben Torres. I think he's professional. I just don't know if this was the right book for him. But
I just didn't care about anything that happened in this book. And I think Marvel's strategy of making their villains protagonists, I mean, we're also reading a Doctor Doom book, is a bad one.
Yeah, no, you're right.
So what are the two things that can happen here? We can either learn something humanizing about Kingpin, and he's not really quite as bad as he was before, or he's just going to be a monster through the whole thing.
Right.
And so, okay, I don't need to know he's a monster. He's better when he's a villain as a monster. I don't need to follow a story about it. Or if I try to humanize him, like, any more humanizing and he's not a bad guy anymore.
It's true, but so I don't disagree with you, but I think one of the things that was happening is that it's almost like I think he's a monster. I think the last page is sort of the key that he's a monster, but we're like spending time with seeing how like a sociopath charms people. And it worked on me as a reader. And even though in my mind, I'm like, that's a bad guy, they shouldn't change him or whatever, I was like, I kind of want to spend more time with him. I mean, he's kind of charming. And I like that yo-yo sort of happening in the story, because I know we've been down that road a bunch. And this is definitely taking a cue, I think, from the Daredevil TV show where, you know, Kingpin was sort of two-sided, but on the other side, he was still a ruthless killer. And that sort of that's like so many sort of good TV shows that have had like the Tony Soprano thing where you kind of like him. You kind of want to hang out with him. And then every once in a while you have to be reminded that he's just evil. It does suck me in. I like how it kind of keeps fooling me. The Vic Mackey character, something like that. And also just to speak to the art, like I actually see what you're saying, but I thought stylistically there was some really, I really like that first page where he's like, or not the first page, the first page with Kingpin where like he's got his big hands and he's, you know, it definitely borrowed a little from sort of a Frank Miller thing. And I can see what you're talking about, but like stylistically, I thought it worked, even though I think there were some probably technical issues that weren't quite right. Her neck has problems.
Yeah, it definitely from the writing side. I mean, we all know, and full disclosure, Matt Rosenberg is a friend of my, a friend of ours, but also a good friend of mine. So I'm you know, there's a little bit of bias there in that I enjoy it, but I'll be a little critical here in that it's definitely borrowing. And this one's for you, Connor. It's definitely borrowing a lot from the Netflix show characterization. Mm-hmm.
But isn't
it was. Not surprising. Yeah, but it should be. I don't know if it should or shouldn't be. But it definitely. I could hear Vincent D'Onofrio saying these lines and all that kind of thing. And I know they're doing some big Daredevil. You know, like they've got they're rallying around Daredevil here between this and the Bullseye series and all that sort of stuff. So I don't know what it's all working towards. But I was engaged and it didn't. I mean, hey, you know, I didn't fall asleep reading it, which which may or may not have happened to one of the. one of the people on this podcast recently. But Connor, I see your point. I did struggle with the art, not because I think Torres is bad, and maybe he's not. You know, he's a newer artist, so I think he's still got a lot of work to do. But I don't know if the tone worked for me.
Yeah, I mean, like I'm looking at the panels of her sitting at the bar, and I see what you're talking about, Connor. It's right there, you know, sort of just. If I was going by on just style and, you know, mojo or whatever it is, like, it worked.
Yep. All right. So ratings. Josh, ratings.
4.
All right. Connor?
2.
I'm going to go with a 4 as well.
4.
Sticking with it.
No.
Yes. Josh? Yes, I will. So, all right. There you go. So if you want to become a patron, you can vote on the pick each week and help us pick out a book to read. Go to patreon.com/ifanboy, and that's not all you get.
That's right.
Josh?
Yeah, every week we are going to give superpowers out. I was actually looking through the thing. I was like, okay, I'm not first. We give superpowers out to our patrons. They're doling them out 4 at a time, 4 every week. So we are going to get to you. But for what's the level? Is it over 5?
I think it's over 5, I think.
Over 5.
I'll verify that. I felt like I've been meaning to put that into the script so we would know. If you hear me do this spiel, I often pause at that same point, and then I'm like, no, I don't remember. So
And then there's a little like, I should know this.
No, so actually it's $5 and up.
Yep. 5 and up. So we had it right. We just didn't know we did.
We're just not confident. That's the thing. We're unworthy, Thor.
So first up, Connor, you go.
You got your... Tim Meekins... Thank you for being a patron. Tim Meekins has Swiss Army fingers in that every one of his fingers can change into an attachment found in a Swiss Army knife, a standard one, not the oversized one. Come on, that's too many attachments, but just the regular one. Corkscrew, sure. Flathead screwdriver, absolutely. You need a guy with a Phillips head? You know, he's got his ring finger for that.
Question.
Yeah.
Physically?
Yes,
his fingers. Like, his fingers are those things.
He's no,
like,
yeah, he can change like them. He can change them from regular fingers to these things.
Like a clay face kind of thing.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. Toothpick?
Can he turn into anything or only items one would find on a Swiss Army
only
knife?
Only items from a standard Swiss Army knife.
Like the... Wait a minute. Well, now what's standard?
There's the standard size one, the regular one. Then there's like a giant.
Like, wait, no, you're
one.
Talking to the travel one or the.
I mean,
the
there are dozens.
I feel like I when I think of Swiss Army knife, I think there are 3 levels. There's the little one that's got that the little scissors,
it's the keychain one,
and little scissors and the little tweezers. So then the next stuff is you've got a couple of different size knives, maybe a screwdriver one. You know, it's
the
got
classic,
like six things.
Come on,
it's then
the
there's the guys. Then there's the mega one that's like got 20 things that like the dad brought home in Gremlins.
I believe I said not the mega one.
That's the bathroom, okay, buddy. That's not.
It's the classic.
He didn't bring it home. He invented it.
Right. Yeah. Exactly.
Swiss Army classic.
Okay. All right.
So he has a small blade, scissors, screwdriver, toothpick, tweezers, and there you go.
All right. Cool. Standard Swiss Army knife. All right, yeah. Cool. The question, is it Swiss?
Well,
He Swiss?
Is he Swiss? I mean, like, does it have the Swiss logo on it or no?
No. I mean, his fingers don't turn red. They just, you know.
All right. Yeah. Okay, got it. Yeah. Okay. Cool.
Listen, does he affect a Swiss accent when he uses it? Yes.
And listen, will he get involved in a fight? No, he's neutral.
No. He's right. He stays back and makes a lot of money.
Right. Right, exactly. Okay. Jeffrey Wisniewski, Jeffrey W., I want to thank for being a patron. And Jeffrey can fry bacon on his forearms.
Nah.
So his forearms heat up and like a heating element, and he can put a strip of bacon there and it'll cook, but only bacon.
So if you touch his forearm, you're not going to get burned?
No. It literally only warms bacon. It's a frequency thing.
Does he have to make it happen, or is it always like that? Could somebody like surreptitiously put bacon on his arm and cook?
Yeah, no, yeah. If a bacon delivery fell on top of him, it immediately starts sizzling as soon as it hits his forearms, but only from his wrist to his elbow.
Right. Now, what level of heat are we talking about? Full heat?
If you leave the bacon on there, it will burn, but you know,
but the correct temperature.
Like the correct temperature, right?
Slightly medium high.
Yeah, exactly, right. Exactly.
Because right. So. Okay. You don't want it too low. I have a practicality question.
Sure.
Where does the fat go? Is there a collection source of any kind, or does it just run off?
It absorbs into his arm.
Oh,
That can't be healthy.
Right, no, but his body processes it. It's not like he gets fatter.
But that's really helpful, actually.
Yeah. Yeah, no, he's self-contained, yeah. Huh. It comes out with in the waist.
I was looking at that guy's bathroom.
All right, there you go.
Jason, Chris Baker, I want to thank you for being a patron. You guys know when you just get a little snatch of a song in your head, not necessarily a lyric, just a little melody or a couple of notes,
mm-hmm.
and there's no way to check that?
Mm-hmm.
Ask Jason.
Oh, wow.
So he's like Shazam.
He can identify that no matter what it is. It's uncanny. That's all of my powers. They're all uncanny. But he can, if you were like, I got this thing in my head, it's, you know, da-da-da-da. He's like, oh, that's that game show theme song. Oh, God, thank God.
Which game show theme song?
I don't know. I was just making that up.
Oh, okay, because that would mean a lot. I mean, yeah.
It just happened that.
Spanish Flea.
The classic episode of Married with Children when Al Bundy couldn't remember. Mm-hmm, him.
Right. I remember that episode, and I hated that show.
Great show.
Yeah.
Pedro Picor. Hopefully that's close to what your
PK.
Name is.
Hair? PK? Yeah.
Pedro always has stamps.
Do they materialize?
They just materialize. You don't know where they come from. It's not like he's got a big roll. It's just, you need a stamp. There's the stamp.
All right. I am holding in my hand a warranty card for a guitar effects pedal that has been sitting here on this workbench for at least 6 weeks because I don't have a stamp.
There you go. You need to get Pedro around.
Yeah, if only you knew Pedro, he would help you.
Or could go to a store with whatever stamps cost now. What do stamps cost now? 40?
I think they're like 44 and a half now.
No, I think they're more than that. They're like 47, 48.
Yeah, they were a half a cent for a while, and that blew my mind. Because I didn't know we could do that again still. I thought we had moved beyond
it's
a half
two bits
a cent.
For a stamp now, I think.
The fucking hay penny.
Yeah.
You got to buy two stamps. I don't want to. They're half a cent. I don't have a half cent for you. You got to buy two stamps.
Oh, no. I see how it works. Let's have a standoff here. I want to buy one stamp.
I just want one stamp. Yeah. You give me change. Give me half a penny of change. Anyway,
you know how to make the stamp.
How to hold the stamp.
All right, so go to patreon.com. You can sign up. Anybody $5 or higher gets a superpower. And now we're going to hear from you, the audience, not just patrons. Anybody, any audience member can call or write in by calling, sending us a audio file via email. And that's what Alex from Brazil did, who wants to know if he's screwed.
Hey, guys, this is Alex from Brazil. You can also call me Joepedia, since the superpower you guys gave me was that I know everything about every G.I. Joe character ever. I've been thinking about my question for the past 15 years, ever since I've read Robin number 1 in 1992. And my question is, I really love Tim Drake. Am I fucked? That was my first DC comic, and from that I became a lifelong DC fan. And right now I just can't connect to the DC universe at all. Will I ever feel the connection again? Do you guys still feel the connection you guys felt? Should I just let it go and enjoy comics for what they are and don't worry about my DC love? Thanks for everything, guys.
Now, I don't mean to stereotype, but that was the sexiest voicemail we've ever gotten. And it's not, at first, I said it as a joke, and then it kept going, like, do you feel a connection? And I was like, I do.
Yes.
I do, Alex.
It's goddamn sexy. That's
so,
what it is.
You know, if that's offensive, so be it.
The first bit of bad news for Alex is that 1992 wasn't 15 years ago. It was 25 years ago.
So we're just going to go downhill from here.
unless you're calling us from 10 years ago, in which case.
Possible.
But yeah, because he said it. I was like, wow, it's only been 15 years since Robin number one. I was like, that can't be possible. I graduated college. I mean, they didn't know.
You didn't start thinking about it until 10 years after that.
Yeah, so, yes. I mean,
yes.
I don't have a lot of faith in the mainstream comics world at the moment. I'm enjoying the books. I have fun reading them and talking about them. But in terms of long-term strategy, feeling like they know what they're doing, feeling like they have good ideas to keep moving forward, I don't have a lot of faith in either company. I think Marvel is shackled to their other media. I think DC dug a hole within 52 and they want to have it both ways so they don't actually move forward. I'm willing to wait until the big event that's supposed to be coming that's going to sort everything out, but who knows? That hasn't been really mentioned since the rebirth. you know, as people might imagine, I've got the same problems as Alex has. I don't feel the same deep connection to the DC universe that I used to. And so,
well, I mean, this is the eternal question. I mean, you could substitute DC with X-Men for me, or Marvel for anybody. You know, for that.
I feel worse about Marvel a little bit, because at least DC's keeping the characters around.
Like, I've just only recently stopped crying myself to sleep over Cyclops, and I just don't know what else, you know, what more I can take. But no. In reality, it's like it's hard when that your connection is. Well, that joke bombed, by the way. When it, like, there was just no reaction from either of you.
We just let it go.
Yeah, but
I was trying to think of a follow up, and I didn't have anything. And then too much time passed, so we had to keep going.
Fair enough. But yeah, but the thing is that, like, when that thing, that link that got you into it is gone, it can be demoralizing. And then you look for other things to interest you, and there's not a whole lot there sometimes. So, I mean, my advice to Alex, I mean, you know, listen, you sounds like you're a sexy, sexy man. Just hang in there, because it comes and goes. I mean, as you get older, this goes with anything. As you get older, you fade, you come back, you fade, you come back.
All right, let's...
I don't know. I don't know if that's – my worry is that's no longer true. We used to say that all the time about mainstream comics, but it really does feel like the last 5 years has been a real fundamental change in the way Marvel and DC do business.
I mean, let's also take on board, like, maybe it's us or you, or, like, you know, like, you don't have the same relationship because you're not the same person and they're not the same kind of company.
Yeah.
You know, and that's not – bad, it's not irregular, it just happens,
right?
Like a 25 years is a long time to expect something to a be the same and see make you feel the same. Like, it you couldn't, like, you're not that thing. And even if, you know, even if you think about the music you listen to in high school as still being like your favorite thing, it isn't the same. Like, it doesn't make you feel the same thing. It's not a feeling of new, it's a feeling of familiarity. And even that can, you know, can get old if you try to stay in it for too long. So
I don't agree with that, because these characters have been around for way longer than 25 years. So for more than 25 years before that, it did work. And you did have those same feelings.
As you came through the late 80s, people who had grown up, you know, reading them in the 50s were like, oh, these aren't the same. They're not going to feel the same way about them. Like, they were, you know, it's just a different thing. And you're a different person. Like.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's fair.
I don't know about that.
I could see. But once again, to be in the middle, I see both of the points of view. You know, I mean, I see, you know, like, you do evolve, your tastes do change, and but I think that there's also a dramatic bond that is built with characters that I mean, I know it, I feel it.
That's why I think comics are different than other media. And that's why we were talking about Kingpin. You were talking about, you know, Sopranos. What works on a TV show that lasts for a couple of years doesn't what works for a character that's around for 60 years.
Yeah.
To me. And so you build this generations-long bond with these characters. And I think for the first time we're seeing them go away. And that's why it's different now than before. The characters are gone, which they didn't do before.
Well, yeah, or that they're gone in the way that we remember and liked about them. You know, because they, you know, characters are around and kicking, but, like, they're different. These characters have changed dramatically in the way that they're characterized in the past 5 years, I think, than any time that I've been reading comics.
Yeah. And I don't see the indication of that changing. That's what I'm saying. I will see. I'm hoping the logos, but I don't see an indication of it changing.
Well, thank you for that voicemail, Alex, from Brazil. It was wonderful. And if you've got a question, you can email us or send a audio file to us at contact@ifanboy.com. That's how you get on the show.
I wanted to quickly mention one more time the anthology of short prose stories that I was involved with, did a story for, called Waiting to Be Forgotten, Stories of Crime and Heartbreak, inspired by The Replacements. All the stories in the book are inspired by a Replacements song, Seminole, Minnesota.
It's not about the Keanu Reeves football movie.
It's a good cast in that.
Because I would have, read that book. Yeah.
Josh, can you get this on Amazon?
You can get it on Amazon.com.
So go to the Amazon link on ifanboy.com and then search for "Waiting to Be Forgotten."
Yep. Yep.
Cool. So we have so many podcasts that they're literally piled up all around me. So if you want to go back in the feed,
it's tremendous. You can check out
just the best podcasts.
You can check out our most recent book, "Explode: Russian Olive to Red King" by Stuart and Catherine Immonen. We did a podcast about the first episode of Riverdale. We did a podcast about the first episode of Powerless. Connor and Ryan and Paul did a podcast about Justice League Dark animated movie.
Yep.
Connor and I talked about the new TV show Legion on FX.
Yep.
Those are all in the feed underneath the show, so you can check those out. A lot.
Down.
It's not stopping there, because this past weekend, the Lego Batman movie came out, and, you know, we were like, that's comics, so we all went to go see it. So you're going to get a podcast about a Lego Batman movie, and then Josh has got a Talksplode coming up this month. So lots to look forward to.
Yeah.
Do you want to unveil the subject of the Talksplode?
Yeah, sure. I talked to Judd Winnick, formerly DC Comics and Marvel Comics writer, and now he's creating a series of kids' books called Hi-Lo. You may remember him from the Real World San Francisco as well. Judd and I talked for a good long time, and that will be your way in the nearest future.
And also, cool. Then a couple weeks, we'll have a Logan show, because that's coming out soon.
Yes.
Train
keeps rolling.
All night long.
All right, so head over to iFanboy.com. That's where you can find all of those podcasts that Ron just listed. If you like us at Facebook.com/iFanboy or follow us at iFanboy on Twitter, you can find out what the pick is before the show comes out. You can follow us individually at J.A. Flanagan, at Ron Exo, and at C.S. Kilpatrick on Twitter and Instagram, because we know the value of keeping your name the same across multiple platforms.
and we were early enough that it isn't the real Connor Kilpatrick.
Right.
Another Connor Kilpatrick would be like, what the hell? And if you like that kind of humor, you want to go leave a review on iTunes. Or if you just like the show, or if you don't like the show, there's also an equal opportunity for you to say so there. But it will hurt our feelings. Better yet, you can tell your friends about it. Spread the word, both through real life and social media or wherever. If you liked something about the show, let people know about it. That is our big deal. There's this joke that we've had here forever about introducing your mom to podcasts. I can't speak to the efficacy of that. I don't know.
I just want to hear from one mom who still listens.
My son gave me this USB in 2007. I never read a comic book in my life.
I just want to hear from a mom.
Have either of your moms ever listened?
No.
Yes.
Yes.
I texted my mom the other day, because her birthday is coming up, and I had to send something to a friend of hers. And I said, I got a package coming from my mom. Look out for it. And she goes, your mom and I listened to your show the other day. And I was like,
oh, jeez.
Which one? She was like, 570. I was like, oh, like the new one.
Oh, jeez.
So they listen.
Does that mean they listen every week?
I don't think so. Because, I mean, it took 570 episodes to get them to listen to one.
What if it's funny. Been this whole time? They just haven't told you.
I feel like I'd have heard some more feedback in that time.
That's very funny.
All right. Congratulations.
All right. Well, if you're a mom, please write in. Let us know. Until then, I'm Ron.
I'm Connor.
I'm Josh. Bye, Mom. Faster, I don't hide.